Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for the Corlin Economics Report. We are going to start out with economics and a smattering of politics here in this first segment. Jimmy and I are going to do the entire show singularly, just the two of us. Couldn't really find any guests that we felt were qualified really to talk on this particular subject who were willing to come on the show. Let me say this. The numbers that came out for October, the employment numbers, were absolutely abysmal. Now, on Citizen Free Press, Biden was quoted as taking credit for the really good employment situation. The employment situation in the United States stinks. Let me tell you why it stinks. Number one, the civilian non-institutional population in the United States, which has a population of over 300 million people, the civilian non-institutional population is 161,458,000. That number was participating in the labor force. What does that mean? That means they either had a job, were actively seeking a job during the month of October, or what have you. Now, when you look at the non-institutional labor force, that includes virtually people who are not in prison, not in nursing homes, not caregivers, etc., etc. People who really cannot work. The number that Jimmy came up with and I came up with is that's about 39% of the American population. Now, when you have 39% of the American population that in fact is not productive, what does that do to the gross national product? What does that do to the net national product? It absolutely puts it in the toilet. One of the reasons that the growth in the United States, and I think this personally is an inflated number, right now the Biden administration, the executive office, is claiming a 2% growth rate in the United States. I say that's hogwash. I think it's way under 2%. Jimmy, any comments?
Okay, first of all, I think coming out of the pandemic, we should be way above that. We dropped so far, we should be climbing at 4 or 5% right now. Last month, we had an exceptionally low jobs report. It was a shock to people. The analyst had basically predicted between 500,000 and 700,000, and we came up with like under 200,000. That hasn't even been revised or at least published yet.
Correct.
This month it came in with 531,000, and everyone's super excited. But we still need to go a lot farther to get back to the levels of employment that we were at prior to COVID. And I think there are a number of reasons why, but this workforce participation number versus those out of the labor force, the 39%, you're absolutely right. That's a lot of people that aren't working. And I think there's a number of reasons for it. One of them is we've got the mandates, and a lot of people are saying, wait a second, I just spent a year and a half either working from home or having this my school shut down for my kids, or at least a portion of that. And they're figuring out that, you know what, they don't need the same things that they needed prior to that. I think people's expectations, I think they're cautious. We know that savings rates went up very, very high during COVID. And I think people are saying, yeah, we don't need all that we needed before. And maybe one parent is going to stay home now and homeschool kids. And we know that's a pretty sizable population, probably in the 8 to 10, maybe even 15% in some areas, especially in the liberal blue lockdown states. And then, of course, the mandates are forcing people out of jobs. This month, we've got 531,000 jobs. It should have been higher. It should have been last month, and this month would have actually been what the expectations were for last month. So it's basically an entire fraud to say that this is a great report right now. And I think our expectations are low. We should be going into the holiday season where there should be more employment for retail, small business, but we're not seeing that. I think it's a harbinger of things to come.
Of course.
But at the same time, I think that there are some, the Biden spin machine will be able to take advantage as we come out of some of these COVID lockdowns. And I expect this regime to probably change some of the directions and some of the mandates based on what happened this last week in some of the elections around the country. And they're going to try and ride that. Their best option is to let the economy go, but they've been trying to control it. And of course, with this budget, they may destroy everything. So
that's very true. Now, I want to talk about two things that I think are really, really critical. And CFS, I want to get your input on this. I want to talk a little bit about motive. Okay, there are two potential motives for what's going on economically in the United States right now. One of them is that the COVID situation, which really is the bottom line cause of this, people are not able to look for jobs. People are not able to maintain jobs if they don't comply with the executive branch's decision that if you are not fully vaccinated, that means two vaccination shots and a booster. If you're not fully vaccinated, you're not able to work in many, many industries and areas right now. Now, number
one, or the
one,
federal government or any federal contractor. Yeah,
correct.
I'm sorry. Correct.
Yeah, right. Now, the fact of the matter is one of two things is happening right now. China is winning the war. If you accept the fact that the COVID situation was instigated by China in Wuhan, then they are very definitely winning the war, and people are not even totally aware of it. I'm aware of it because I've had an awful lot of experience, personal experience, with the Asian mentality. These people are brilliant. Let me say that, number one. Number two, you have the government basically in a situation where they are doing everything they can to browbeat people, hurt people economically, so they will buy the socialism concept that's coming right around the corner. We know for a fact that that's what the Biden administration would like to see right now. Jim, which one do you think it is? We got 2 minutes. I'm going to give them all to you.
So I believe that the regulation and the overreach by the executive branch of government right now, completely ignoring the legislative branch, I think that is incredibly detrimental to the economy. I think they're pushing climate change issues. They're pushing budgets that are absolutely astronomical budgets in this entire $3 trillion, $3.5 trillion infrastructure package. These things are crazy. And they're neglecting some of the more important budget items, like right now the defense budget is sitting back. And of course, as we see a more woke military and we see our capabilities declining rather rapidly with the Chinese increasing capabilities, this sets America up for a very difficult situation, and the world actually, as the Chinese economic influence grows, their military influence grows, and their ability to manipulate not only markets but media and propaganda efforts, they are creating conditions that are really undermining a lot of our future. We still have inflation, incredibly high inflation, and it's going to get worse. We still have a number of areas right now where this administration is failing miserably, and one jobs report is not going to fix it. And I'll tell you, they're going to have to make some hard decisions in order to get people back to work, which are against maybe some of their policies that they've had with COVID lockdowns and the mandates. They're going to impact everything: defense resources. They're going to impact our transportation distribution networks. And as the more they do that, you take 5 or 10% of the population out of the, again, above what's out of the labor force right now, we're in a very difficult situation.
Jim, you got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stick around. Hope you're enjoying Jimmy and I doing this solo.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. chatting with Jim McKinney. We're doing this show solo. I'm very proud of the first segment that we just did. I can't understand how anybody with an IQ above 2 cannot understand our logic, saying that our economy is really, really in trouble right now, and consequently the country is really in trouble. Jim, Tuesday was an interesting day. It made me realize that perhaps more and more Americans understand what's going on right now, because as the Seattle Times said, the Democrats got lambasted in this election last Tuesday. Carvel said that the lead Democratic strategist said that the Democrats ran very, very dumb campaigns. I happen to agree with that. Having said that, Jim, why don't we summarize what happened this past week, this past Tuesday?
So there was nothing more earth-shaking than the Virginia elections for the state-wide positions of governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general. The Republicans swept all three positions after the Biden administration had won Virginia by 10 points just in November of last year. Glenn Youngkin ran a campaign basically saying we need to let parents decide what to do with their children. Terry McAuliffe ran a campaign that said the government's going to solve the problems for you. Terry McAuliffe's primary argument was that Glenn Youngkin was racist and that the entire Republican Party was racist. And what you get in the outcome of the election was Glenn Youngkin winning. The new lieutenant governor is Winsome Sears, a black Jamaican immigrant, former Marine, Republican. And the attorney general is a
Cuban
Hispanic gentleman.
Right.
So Jason Miaras. So you've got two of the three Republican leaders running in Virginia, winning the election. Two of the three are minorities, and the entire liberal progressive establishment is continuing to argue that it was a racist campaign, that it was dog whistles for racism, that it was white supremacy. Absolutely ridiculous arguments, and the American people, certainly people in Virginia, are beginning to see through it. The downside of it is there were still nearly almost 50% of the people, 48, 49% of the people that still voted and listened to those ridiculous and provenly wrong arguments. So quite an interesting event. And of course, New Jersey and around the country in school boards, in legislative districts, woke agenda, critical race theory, government controlling your parents' choices. And of course, underlying all of this is the continued lockdowns and the real mismanagement of the entire country by Joe Biden, with border issues, with immigration failures, with the Afghanistan, absolutely a terrible, terrible disaster in Afghanistan, with higher inflation, with very slow economic recovery, and then mandates that are forcing individuals out of jobs because of a government mandated requirements for vaccines that have very little scientific studies behind them. And I think people are beginning to say this is enough, and they've had enough of the woke politics, and they've had enough of the COVID lockdowns.
Well, what I'm wondering is, given the fact that Jen, Biden's press secretary, was triple vaccinated, and yet she still contracted COVID, given that fact, and we've had a lot of guests on this show, Jimmy, as you know, a lot of physicians who were at the time double vaccinated, and now I'm sure triple vaccinated, who also contracted COVID. What I want to say is that the Democrats are really going to have to go, whoops, we made a mistake. I don't know if they have the chutzpah to do that. I hope they do, because they did make a very, very serious mistake in terms of the COVID situation.
Yeah, I think it's COVID. It's across the board in almost all the policies that affect average Americans right now. The tax bills, the idea that somehow a $3.5 trillion infrastructure budget will not cost Americans a thing. It's going to cost somebody. And they say it's the rich, but in the end, corporations, corporate taxes, people end up paying more. Inflation's going to go up. We've got these terrible supply chain issues. All of these issues are coming together to push, to have the one place people are able to push back is at the ballot box. And we see it happening in Virginia. We saw it happening in small locations in Ohio, in Seattle, and in Minnesota. People push back on anti-police agendas. They're frustrated. They're upset with crime. They're upset with the violence and the, and you know, they're saying, wait a second, the Republicans can do better, they can do more, and they're better capable of this. What is really disturbing is that in some of these states, and New Jersey is another exceptional example, and of course in the federal government right now, the big argument is, well, you know, you're alienating and taking away voter rights by forcing voter ID, by having auditing, by actually looking at what's happening behind the scene. And what we see in New Jersey in the Phil Murphy race against the gentleman, Cittarelli, the Republican, you had what should have been a very easy victory for Murphy up until the, really up until the week before the election. Right. The polls were showing a very wide Democratic benefit. But what you're seeing is a big pushback. The vote was so close. And Cittarelli had moved up in the lead after the vote was counted, but then these small areas keep finding more ballots. And we know what happened with Christine Gregoire and Dino Rossi in Washington that started this let's count the votes until we win issue when less than 100 votes after the third recount and they found 100 votes in a box somewhere that went all to Christine Gregoire. You know that Democrats have had these numerous events that question the integrity of the systems, and they protect it in those states. They don't have the attorney generals. They don't have, you know, there's not opposition to that type of corruption that goes on at lower levels around the country in the elections in these blue states. And the reason why is because they want to take the advantage. They want to, they don't have, in my view, they don't have a moral background. And I think people are fed up with it. I think that it's starting to collapse the entire facade, and the lies are becoming so apparent that people are pushing back. I know we've only got a few minutes left here, or a few seconds left on this event, but something's bound to change, and this was a good start in Virginia.
Jimmy, I agree 100%. Something is bound to change, and Virginia is an excellent, excellent start. I think the funniest thing that happened in Virginia is when the governor basically called the Republicans racist, and boy, that is the stupidest statement that anybody can make. Ladies and gentlemen, top of the hour news. Jim and I are going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. I'd ask you a question. Was the top of the hour news accurate? You're really starting to wonder, at least not you. I'm really starting to wonder how accurate the news is after that first segment that Jim and I did, realizing how really misleading the employment numbers for people who don't have any knowledge whatsoever of basic economic principles are really misleading those numbers were. Anyway, we're going to open up the second half of KER Politics. We're going to talk about the Durham investigation. When Jim and I discussed this off mic, and he really brought me up to speed as to what's going on right now, you know, it took 5 years, but it looks like it's going to be very, very successful. Jimmy, tell the listeners why it's going to be very successful.
So I can't speculate on the success, but what we do see right now is the Durham team indicting two key players, or actually arresting one, indicting another. The first indictment was a couple of weeks ago. It was Andrew Sussman. He was a Hillary Clinton campaign lawyer and the lawyer for the Democratic National Committee. And he actually would participate in his indictment. It specifically talks about him lying to investigators in the development of the Russian conspiracy theory. And what we're seeing now is the beginnings of what could become a flood of information on how the entire Russian collusion narrative was fabricated by the Clinton campaign and operatives within the campaign or associated with Hillary Clinton in order to smear Donald Trump prior to the election, but then most importantly, after the election, the continuation of the FBI and the Department of Justice undermining the rule of law and actually using some of the information they knew to be false to continue an investigation against the administration for political ends and purposes through the Mueller investigation. And the second, so Andrew Sussman, a Hillary Clinton senior lawyer, connected with Perkins Coie law firm. And again, that's Mark Elias was with Perkins Coie, but he left Perkins Coie just a few weeks ago. Was hired on by the Terry McAuliffe campaign, but he's probably got to be looking behind his back on what's happening here because he was involved as well. And then Igor Danchenko. Igor Danchenko is an analyst with the Brookings Institute. He was arrested on the 3rd of November for lying to the FBI on who was funding and who was behind the information that actually created the dossier that was used as the justification for the investigation against Trump, used as a justification to get FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, surveillance warrants against a number of members of the Trump campaign. And most of this information has been very carefully watched. And the reason why it's beginning to seep out is not because of leaks, press leaks, which happened almost on a daily, if not weekly, if not daily basis during the entire Mueller investigation by the Mueller team, but because of actual indictments and arrests. And what that tells me is that there's a very thorough process ongoing to get all ducks in a row, to actually get the legal foundation and the basis of this, and then ideally to come up with the truth behind who started this entire process that undermined and basically undermined the governance of America for a few years, and of course undermined the presidency of Donald J. Trump.
Just for a second, give our listeners, if you would, an example of some of the lies that occurred.
Okay, so there was inside this dossier, there were lies saying that Donald Trump had hired prostitutes to get on top of a bed that Obama had slept in the Hotel Rossi, I believe, in Moscow, and that the prostitutes peed on the bed. This was absolutely ridiculous arguments. There were lies that Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, had gone to Prague in order to connect with Russians. There was a lie that there was a server connected in Trump Tower directly to the Russians that was feeding information back and forth for them to coordinate the campaign activities, when in fact that server had been placed while Trump was doing, like 10 years before, or I think 7 or 8 years before, when Trump was doing business with Russia, but it actually was never used. These were lies that were perpetuated. And then, of course, the accusations that people on the Trump campaign were acting on behalf of Russian agents. And of course, you know, we saw this National Security Advisor, former DIA director, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, accused of spying, of false information, of giving information, and just incredible things for him to be fired and then charged with false statements. And then the judge would not, in spite of the prosecution saying we we actually do not have evidence of this. The judge would not let it go. These types of things absolutely destroyed confidence in the Trump administration and kept Democrats on fire for years, and continue in some cases to keep pundits on fire, accusing the Trump administration of collusion with Vladimir Putin and the Russian government in order to steal the election in 2016.
Boy, I got to tell you, it did take 5 years, but if this thing comes out, the change that I've been praying for to occur in our country from a political standpoint is very definitely going to happen. And
I really hope that we get to the bottom of it, that it is legally founded. I think Jonathan Turley, he's a well-known legal scholar, constitutional scholar. He's written saying how close this is coming to the actual Clinton, directly to Hillary Clinton. What we need is the truth to come out and legally sound principles, that all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, and this stands up and not just become another political circus. There's no question the left is going to continue to argue that it's a political circus. They've argued that the Durham investigation was just political retribution. But the reality is, we have to have confidence in our government. We have to have confidence that the members of the senior leadership, including Robert Mueller and Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe, as well as, Sally Yates in the Department of Justice, Rosenstein, some of these other people, that they are acting not with political ends, but actually acting in the best interest of Americans and protecting individual civil liberties and rights. Without that, our entire nation is at risk, and it's edging ever so closely with this administration.
Well, I got to tell you, one of my reasons for being somewhat cautious about Donald Trump is the fact that he's not conciliatory. Now, in the end, it would appear from what your investigation has turned up, Jim, it would appear that Trump is going to be the winner. But I have to say, if he were a bit more conciliatory, in my opinion, I don't think any of this would have happened, that I think he would have served two full terms.
Yeah, I think there's no matter what, they would have attacked him. They did it. They're doing it to Glenn Youngkin. They're doing it to anybody. And they have no moral guides, no moral rules to keep them from cheating and stealing, because they don't look at a higher power. And that's the unfortunate reality of winner-take-all politics.
Jimmy, real quick, because we're down. We've got about 20 seconds left. I want to talk in the second hour about how they're doing this to Youngkin. That's one thing I totally don't understand. Just unaware of it. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. I'm going to be right back to wrap up KER Politics with my friend Jim McKinney, the best informed political individual in the country. Welcome back here to wrap up KER Politics. This is the first time Jim and I have done a solo with no guests, and I want to say I think this is a precedent for things to come. I find this show to be much more informative, much more thought-provoking than when we are distracted by guests. Having said that, let's get back to Glenn Youngkin. What's the deal there, Jimmy?
Yeah, so Glenn Youngkin, he comes out of in like last month and a half, and basically literally destroys Terry McAuliffe in a deep blue state.
Right.
And the accusations that are coming out from numerous, CNN, MSNBC, all kinds of, major network news, is that somehow this was a racist, white supremacist election, that it was pushed back and people are tired of accepting. I think the argument has been they don't want to teach their children about racism. They don't want to teach their children about, hate. And of course, they're saying that critical race theory was not taught in Virginia, which it's actually on the website for the State Board of Education. So the lies that are being spun are attempting to undermine actually a guy that just was standing up and saying, you know what, I'm going to do the right thing. He's been accused of being, you know, a Christian zealot, of a white right-wing extremist. We're seeing it from the Washington Post, from the New York Times, from every one of the pundits on the network news stations. So I think the very sad reality is that people without moral context, people without willingness to actually critically accept issues, that are not willing to see their own faults, if they keep doubling down on it, they're just going to do whatever they can to win. And I believe that's exactly what happened with Donald Trump. And I think that the Democrats are going to try. They think it worked for them. I believe that many of the extremists, the progressives, felt that violence worked for them in 2020 before the 2020 election. And I'm afraid that they will push at any level and anything in order to win.
Well, I think a lot of people, let's go up to Seattle just for a second. Let's talk about the CHOP. I think a lot of people felt that, a lot of the progressives felt that was an okay action, that it was a successful action, that the police would be defunded, etc., that there would be massive disorganizations in the police department. And in effect, what happened, as evidenced by the election results last Tuesday, candidates who were very pro-defunding the police, etc., lost their ass. Pardon my French, but they did. And the people who went back to basic moral values pretty much carried that election, I have to say. Jim, comments?
Yeah, I believe that. So there's one motivating factor that really drives people to the polls, and that's fear.
Right.
COVID was used for fear. Violence was used for fear. And then, of course, now you're seeing regular people, Democrats, liberals, independents, saying, holy, you know, cow, if I call 911, who's going to come? Right. When you're seeing police being fired. So they're fearful of themselves. They're fearful of the economy. They're fearful of this progressive woke ideology that is telling them what they have to think and how they have to think. And that is incredible. Not only is it detrimental to our nation and certainly against the basic principles and the foundations of our Constitution, but I think it's actually tearing apart the Democratic Party. I think this has been going on for a long time. I thought it would actually tear them further apart sooner, but now they're facing the reality of an extremely aggressive far left dividing and separating out the moderates in the middle of their own party. And America is not a far left woke racist country. No. And I think they're going to find that it's going to hurt them very seriously.
Well, I think you're right. You know, and I think part of the reason is a number of the candidates in Seattle made the comment that they're a number of the conservative candidates in Seattle made the comment that their progressive opponents were very, very angry and very, very nasty. Now, I saw that in interviews. I watch the Seattle news because I'm interested in what's going on in my city almost on a daily basis, daily evening basis. And, you know, the anger that, for example, Pelosi and Schumer exhibit on television. You want to tell me Schumer doesn't exhibit anger? He looks like the most angry individual in the world, as is Nancy Pelosi, in my opinion. That's the impression that they give. And I have to say that was a big, big mistake in Seattle, and it caused, basically, in my opinion, the progressives to really lose big time. You know, I made a comment that I went out trick-or-treating with my grandsons on Halloween, and I was totally impressed with the people whom I met. All very friendly, all very hardworking, all very, it appeared to me to be open-minded, etc., just nice, decent people. And I made the comment, Jimmy, during one of our daily editorials when I got back, I said, you know, my faith in America has been restored. My same statement was based on only one thing, and that was a gut-level feeling. But it would appear that my gut-level feeling worked out correctly. I think that Seattle, I think that the fact that the mayor is not running for re-election, I think that the fact that the original police chief who Durkin put in left her position because she said, "I'm unable to enforce the law," etc., etc. Actions speak louder than the words. And the actions of Mayor, former Mayor, she still is the Mayor, Durkin, and the police chief really show that the CHOP philosophy did not work. It's a real shame that that turned out to be a violent situation and a few people were actually killed. What did those people die for, you know? What a shame is all I can say, Jimmy.
Go ahead. Yeah, when you talk about, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and, of course, AOC, and then the anger from the left, you know, that's the motivating factor. That's what's getting people out. What they believe is the way to achieve success is through this aggressive, very, you know, let's take everything we can, and then whatever we get, we'll hold. What you find is most Americans are good people.
Yep.
They aren't racist.
Nope.
The vast majority of Americans want to do the right thing. And you have these extremists on this very far outside left that are really trying to motivate and intimidate and use fear as a tool. And it worked for them with COVID. It worked for them with violence, with the George Floyd protests, because they were successful in somehow getting Joe Biden, basically a senile old man that is very incompetent and not running anything right now, they got him elected. And I think that is something that we need to be concerned about, that there are still a lot of people that listen to that. And of course, that's what's happening on the news, the major news networks as well. Glenn Youngkin ran on a very positive campaign. We're going to make Virginia better. We're going to let parents have control of the, you know, be a part of their students and their kids' future. We want that to happen. We want the economy to go forward. You see the complete opposite of government control on the opposition side. And I think it's very, I don't know, it's very detrimental. And the more they try to control, the more damage they do. And I know we're getting close to time here, but let's look at the Democrats' heroes. People like George Floyd, you know, who stuck a gun to a pregnant woman's belly and threatened her with her life, you know, who was on fentanyl and died with, you know, of a heart attack while resisting arrest. Let's look at Bill Clinton. Let's look at Michael Avenatti. Michael Avenatti's in prison right now for lying and for stealing. Robert Mueller, completely incompetent. Jim Comey, Fiona Hill, these people that were publicly raised up as heroes are now being undermined and proving the lies. And the more they go, you know, it's very sad. It's very sad. We want heroes that actually do good for communities.
Jimmy, I disagree. It's not very sad. It took a while, but I think it's going to come out. And I think what's happening now is going to be a testament to the greatness of the United States of America, my country, all of our listeners' country, and your country. We'll be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.